Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Can we start early? I mean, what?
What's stopping us, right?
I guess. Yeah.
Exactly.
Mean, we are two fill-in hosts. We're going to do whatever we want.
That's exactly
right. Start the show early!
Hey, I'm Andy Euler. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense, hopefully. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, Andy. I am Megan McCarty-Carino. It's fun to be here with Andy. I've never co-hosted with Andy before. We're filling in today and tomorrow. But today, it's What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, and that means that it's time for us to answer questions from our listeners. So let's dive right in with our first question.
Hi, this is Rebecca from Baltimore, and I am wondering what 5G actually is. Do I need it? Why do I need it? Thanks for making me smart. Bye.
Definitely going to let you take this one, Andy. I want to
know,
too.
Sure. No, what's funny, too, is that I was on, I don't even know if this is, maybe it's a humble brag. I was on the BBC on Monday talking about, because what happened was some, the rollout of 5G was contested by airlines, right? Sort of talking about, and actually Kai did a wonderful deep dive into altimeters and sort of the danger that could be if planes and pilots and pressure and things like that. There's a really, really nice last week's Make Me Smart has to do with exactly that and sort of the dangers of flying with this new 5G. And so I dug into old stories that I had done on 5G because I feel like I actually have been reporting on 5G for 3 years now because
it's
we've been talking about it for so long. Exactly. And I found my favorite, you know, we have slugs to our stories. So it's like Euler 5G or whatever. my favorite slug though was Euler 5G BS. And basically what I ended up doing, we ended up doing a story about 5G rollout, right? And what happened was T-Mobile and other companies have been talking about 5G and their rollout for a long time. And they said, you know what? You're already on 5G. So everything's great and it's crazy and you can download movies really fast. But what happened was when they launched 5G or when they started calling things 5G, it was just sort of a lesser version or a little better version of your existing cellular platform. So it's not really sort of what we've been thinking about when we talk about 5G, right? We talk about
5G. Yeah, because I swear my phone always says it's on 5G and it's like no big deal.
But what I learned from talking to a whole bunch of really, really smart people about this too is that 5G is actually not it's not just sort of the next generation. It's not sort of the next step up. Well, I mean, I guess it is. But at the same time, it's supposed to be eventually this really, really big, broad infrastructure that is going to do things like lead autonomous drivers and autonomous cars and things like that. It's going to be way different from the infrastructure that we have right now. And so building it out has been, I guess that's why I've been reporting on it for 3 years, right? Is that so much of this building has to be done and not a whole lot of it is done. So I don't think it's a matter of getting 5G or needing it. It's a matter of sort of when it's going to be actually deployed, right?
So it's like the technology is all ready to go. Just the infrastructure has to be in place to kind of be able to handle it.
I think that's exactly right. And I think what's also going to happen, I'm sure there are going to be a lot of people who are going to tell us we have no idea what we're talking about. But I think what's also going to happen is that the technology is only going to advance too. And so when you have that infrastructure, there are going to be things that then sort of get synced in this new infrastructure with this new sort of network. And so it's not just going to be about, again, downloading movies faster and things like that and playing your video games a whole lot faster. It's going to be about sort of the different things that, I guess, flying taxis and things like that are going to be, you know, run by 5G.
Because, I mean, having worked from home, you know, for the last 2 years with all of the hiccups that that has entailed, the prospect of having surgery over 5G does not instill a lot of confidence in me.
I think that's incredibly, incredibly, I have a lot of fear about things like that. I think you're right. Our next question comes from Christian in Seattle. He writes, I'm wondering if you can make me smart about wage theft. It seems to be one of the factors of the Great Resignation, and it seems like a big deal. Megan?
Well, yeah, you know, you and I were chatting before the show about, like, wage theft sounds, it sounds really sizzly when you say
super
it.
Super nefarious.
I imagine like a big gang of people like coming after someone's shift, and you know, it's like a heist thing.
And a heist movie, exactly.
Yeah.
Featuring the Rock. Exactly.
But in reality, you know, sort of wage theft happens. There are cases, obviously, where people don't get paid their normal wages. You know, my brother-in-law works in restaurants. This happens from time to time in the restaurant industry. But usually wage theft is happening, you know, when people are being misclassified. That's one way that it happens. So if you're misclassified as an independent contractor or as a salaried exempt employee, then you're not qualifying for things like overtime. For independent contractors, you're not getting minimum wage. You can end up being paid less than minimum wage. So these kinds of things that happen, that, you know, the whole thing with gig workers and whether they should be classified as independent contractors, the classification thing has become a huge issue with so many more workers being classified as independent contractors and kind of a moving target as to whether that is legally kosher. So the Economic Policy Institute estimates that every year, about 2.4 million workers are subject to wage theft every year. So maybe not getting time and a half for overtime hours, or maybe even not getting paid overtime hours at all for hours that they work past 8 hours, or you know, not being paid the minimum wage properly. And we don't know exactly, you know, how much money workers are losing due to wage theft, because a lot of times this is happening to the most, you know, tenuous workers, to workers who are not going to come forward. This often happens in low-wage industries and service industries with workers. You know, maybe there's immigration status issues that people are afraid to come forward. Or, you know, these are just the most marginalized workers. I know, you know, I did some reporting on home health care aides, and that the Department of Labor was doing a big campaign to educate home health care aides that they are covered under these federal labor laws that guarantee overtime pay and minimum wage. But because they work in people's homes, you know, a lot of workers who kind of work in people's homes, it's kind of a cash business. They might be paid sort of under the table, et cetera. And so may not be getting the kind of wage protections that they are actually owed under the law. Workers lose an estimated $8 billion every year due to these kinds of violations, according to some study by the Economic Policy Institute. And in terms of how it compares to, say, other kinds of ways that people lose money, like other crimes that people might lose money, the EPI also estimated that it totally exceeded in 2012 the value of all other forms of robbery combined. So there were 292,074 robberies in 2012, bank robberies, residential kind of convenience store, street robberies, and it totaled $340 million in value, whereas in 2012, wage theft was more than that. So, you know, it is a big deal.
It's real.
It's something that, you know, I know the Biden administration Department of Labor has recently decided to sort of join forces the different federal agencies that police different federal labor laws and sort of share information about things like worker misclassification. It might surprise people that, you know, there are different labor laws and different agencies enforcing them. So you might have a company that is being investigated for misclassifying workers under, the National Labor Relations Act, which governs unionizing, but maybe not under the Fair Labor Standards Act, which governs overtime. And so they're having some more crossover in these investigations so that they can actually kind of have a little bit more resources to police the broad array of violations that happen in this arena.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you too, is the sort of pushback and the recourse for these individuals. Is it going to be, I mean, do you have to find a lawyer? I mean, a lot of folks, like you said, who work in lower wage jobs, they're not going to be coming after their industries and saying, hey, I have this lawyer who's going to sue you for all of this money. I mean, how does that work?
Totally. And in some cases, so in the state of California, there's a private attorney general's law. So you can actually, as an individual, you could do that if you had the resources and sort of the, you know, moxie to want to put yourself out there and do that, which, of course, many workers, you know, would not, the negative, implications of doing that would probably too great for most workers to want to do that. But California is kind of unique in that as a private citizen, you can kind of pretend that you're the attorney general of your state and sue employers for these kinds of things. In other cases, you know, it's going to be class action lawsuits. It's going to be the Department of Labor, the National Labor Relations Board, the state departments of labor. And of course, investigatory resources for policing all of this stuff are very limited. So only really big cases usually end up, you know, kind of ensnared in those nets.
Makes sense.
Yeah. All right. So let's go to our next question now. It is a voice memo and has something to do with sustainability. So you're going to take this one, Andy.
All right. Fair enough.
Hi, my name is Benji. I'm calling from Guerneville, which is in Sonoma County, California, in the Redwoods. My question is about the climate impact of using wood in my wood stove. Is that better than using a space heater where it's coming from electricity, where the electricity in this case, I've looked it up, is mostly not from renewable sources? Help me out here. Make me smart on the best way to heat this giant home that I'm renting in the beautiful Redwoods without destroying the world. Thanks, folks.
Benji, that's a great question. Yeah. And what's going to be so dissatisfying about my answer too is that it's going, so much of it is going to be, well, it depends, right? So I do a lot of this reporting on climate change and energy policy and things like that, and so much of it has to do with costs and benefits. Not to nerd out on marketplace terms and economics, but a lot of it really honestly does depend on specifics, right? When was your wood stove built? There are a lot of wood stoves now that are considered energy efficient by the EPA. So they have an actual sort of label on them that say, you know what, this wood stove is efficient. And then also, again, Benji, he was smart in looking up sort of where the electricity is coming from that he's using to. That's a huge, huge part of it, right? If you're trying to think about your carbon footprint, you're going to want to worry about where you're getting that energy. And so looking it up and seeing that it's actually going to be, you know, fossil fuels or wherever his energy is coming from, that's a big part of this. Part of the deal, too, is that wood burning wood is, you know, it emits carbon into the atmosphere. One of the really difficult things here in 2018, the EPA actually came out and said that burning wood was carbon neutral, which sounds really great.
That does not sound like it makes sense.
Well, so what ended up happening was there was a lot of pushback, right, from environmentalists, from a lot of scientists who said basically over the really, really, really long term, that's probably accurate, that biomass from forests and from trees, if you're planting more trees to then grow up into those trees that either fell down were sort of farmed, then sure, then it's going to be carbon neutral. When you're talking about burning wood, specifically for heating your home in the redwoods, maybe Benji's getting out there and planting a whole lot of trees, which would be awesome. And maybe he is using wood that has naturally come down next to his house. I don't know. But this sort of carbon neutrality of burning wood is, it's really actually pretty contentious among among environmentalists and among scholars, because very technically it's true because of how long, because again, if you're planting trees and they're, you know, over the course of 200 years, it's going to be replenished over the course of you burning wood to keep yourself warm this winter. Not really.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer.
Huh. This kind of reminds me of the calculations that you have to do to figure out if it's like good to have an EV, buy a new EV. What are, where are you getting the energy to, you know, charge it? We have to know about where your grid is and sort of like doing the calculation on what's the energy that goes into building a new car instead of just keeping an old car, and like all of these individual decisions that you have to be so well educated to be able to know what, whether you're doing the right thing or not.
Well, and I think that's one of the really cool things, I think anyway, about sort of this new movement of environmentalism, is that we have all of this information and we have people that are digging in. And so figuring out what your carbon footprint is and how to reduce it is actually pretty attainable these days. And while reducing your carbon footprint should make you feel good, and again, it should, we should do what we can to change our behavior where possible, of course. Some are arguing that focusing on individual action is shifting the responsibility to consumers and away from big corporations and industries that are responsible for climate change. I mean, there's a whole lot of industry and there's a whole lot of push, and should be, for the way that buildings and offices and things like that are heated. And so Benji doing what he can in his house is great and awesome, but sort of the consumer and shifting that individual sort of responsibility away from big, big businesses, and even those businesses that are, you know, drilling for oil and other fossil fuel industries. It's tough, right? Because we should do what we can. But at the same time, those industries that are directly responsible need to be aware of it. All right. Here is another question that has to do with the Great Resignation.
Hey, Make Me Smart. This is Bob Flynn from Bloomington, Indiana. I'm wondering if you can, well, make me smart. How much will the Great Resignation, sorry, Kai, impact state and federal coffers in terms of loss of income tax revenue? Thanks.
What do you think, Megan?
Is Kai
Great
Resignation as a term?
I think he is. I think he's just tired of hearing about it, or tired
of that. Oh my gosh. I would say 90% of the emails that I get every day from publicists are like, someone to explain the Great Resignation. And then once in a while, someone pops in like, the Great Quit. And I'm like, whoa!
Right.
But I think, you know, so I think that what Bob is getting at, right, is, are all these people quitting affecting income taxes in states that rely on income tax? And I think this whole back and forth about whether to call it the Great Resignation actually gets to kind of an important point about things, which is that maybe Great Resignation is not the most descriptive for what is happening, because it's not like, you know, tons of people are just quitting their jobs to, you know, stay home and play video games.
Some are, which is fine, but
which is totally cool. But, you know, there's a lot of evidence that workers are actually leaving their jobs for other jobs. And, you know, we see some of what has been driving the Great Resignation is just the competition for workers and how
the leverage,
wages
right?
have been increasing. Yeah, so you can get a better deal elsewhere right now, you know, more so than other times in the recent past. And hiring has still been on the upswing. We saw in December there were about 200,000 jobs created in December, you know, pretty average compared to the before times, but we have seen continued job growth through 2021. It is the case that labor force participation remains a bit depressed from before the pandemic. But on the whole, you know, this is an economy that is growing jobs and growing incomes. So it's not like states that depend on income tax are seeing a big drop in tax revenue. In fact, you know, states, I'm in California, and they've just estimated like a $45 billion budget surplus, which we also had a surplus last year. And sort of depending on your income, people got stimulus checks mailed to them, basically refunds of taxes. So California depends really heavily on income taxes, but it's a really progressive income tax structure. So people who make more are taxed more. And we know that during the pandemic that, you know, kind of the rich have gotten richer. People who are high earners have earned even more, and particularly in a tech-heavy state like California. So it's not necessarily the case at all that, you know, income tax has suffered. And then, of course, there's other sources of taxes that states rely on. Capital gains, the stock market has been, you know, maybe a few days off from Omicron, but you know, in general, the stock market has been going pretty crazy over the last 2 years. So capital gains taxes are increasing, of course. Prices of almost everything are going up, so sales taxes are also increasing in most places. Corporation tax revenue is up because corporations have been earning good profits. So this is definitely...
So it's not just those payroll taxes is what you're saying. It's, you're right. We sort of... And I think about this too. In Texas, in a place that's very, very low tax, but also very low service... which I don't know if we say that last part enough when we're courting businesses like Tesla to come and relocate here. We always say low tax. We don't really always say low service. But in places like Texas, we have really high property tax bills, right? And so those are the things that pay for schools. Those are the things that and so, of course, you have your income tax and you have your sort of payroll tax. But when you think of the different taxes that are paying for different things here in Texas, it's It's going to be completely different from a state like California that does rely on those state income taxes to help pay for things. It's just it's so funny because thinking about states cobbling together all of the things that they have to then pay for goods and services or pay for services that we need. It's interesting how different so many different states have the different equations that are put together.
And that's not to mention the $350 billion for state and local governments that were in the American Rescue Act last year. And I guess actually... Because many states are in pretty good shape, you know, fiscally, that some cities and states have decided to reward public employees, use that money to kind of give bonuses and increase salaries for public employees, because there has been this wave of retirements and resignations. And you know, for a number of months, the over the summer and through 2021, the public sector was really suffering because the private sector was increasing, you know, wages much faster. And it took the public sector a little while to catch up. So they're using some of this American Rescue Act money to do that.
And you're right. It's sort of it's those employees sort of figuring out where their leverage is. Right. If you're a public employee and you get a job offer from a private employee, you say, hey, you need to figure out how to pay me this, because that's sort of where the market is. And it's again, it's not necessarily people just resigning and sitting at home. It's folks understanding sort of the value that they're adding to the workplace, and that there's going to be competition for those good workers to do the work.
Totally. It's been a crazy time to cover the workplace, let me tell you. I mean, it just never stops. That's it for us today. Andy and I are going to be back tomorrow, and I'm really going to bring it. I'm going to bring the Hollowed Out Shell Thursday energy, as
Let's
I
do
always
it.
Do.
Let's do it. All right. In the meantime, please keep sending us your questions. We're at makemesmart@marketplace.org. You can leave us a voicemail. Our number is 508-827-6278, also known as 508-UB-SMART. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera, Mark A. Green. Charlton Thorpe is our engineer. Tiffany Bowie is an intern here.
Ben Holliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. They left us with it. Left us all alone with only their theme music. And our That's senior right. producer is Bridget Bodnar.
That's fun. Back tomorrow, right?
Yeah, back tomorrow. I'll crack open some tomato sauce and just go crazy.
Sure.
Strong communication skills are critical for success in business and in life. Hi, I'm Matt Abrahams, and I host Stanford Graduate School of Business's Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Each week, I sit down with experts to discuss the best tips to help you with your communication skills, from conflict management to mastering small talk to tackling communication anxiety. Join us and start to develop and hone your communication skills. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.